Mr. Ellison, reel 7. Rashford Brunsworth, did you get leave?
Yes, we passed out as drivers, etc. And on the 8th of the 1st, was given leave for a fortnight. Sorry, fortnight, 8 to 7 days. 8th to the 16th that we came back. And got the large sum of £3.05 to go on leave. That was the first leave, you know, 3 months in the army, 3 months leave. Between the first time really at home, the only length of time except on the Christmas, the letters got home for the Christmas Day, Boxing Day, very kindly, 2 days. I think it was because we couldn't get back to his offices. Not in the army, no. I was, they say, allowed to come home for Christmas Day and Boxing Day. And then on the 8th of the January, went on 7 days leave. And subsequently came back, and on the 22nd of January, we were sent off to the 14th Battalion at Hornsey.
Went by train.
It took us from Brunsworth down to Durham Station, and then moved the carriage for a crowd of us to go down. If I remember right, I think there was about 60 of us went down to there, to the 14th Battalion. And I ended up in, it was a big hotel we'd taken over there. Straight into training again there, the field craft and this sort of thing. But then, after a day or two, went on the advanced motor training, advanced driver maintenance team, learning about four-wheel drives and taking the bits and putting them together and all this sort of thing. And
the largest.
Bigger ones with 3 tons and so on. And we were sort of, whilst in the 14th, we were sort of detached, as it were, at the end of the village, the MT section. And we were there for about a month, 6th of the first, and the 6th of the 2nd, and the 7th of the 3rd. We were on this train and then back into that, was doing advanced driving and maintenance. And then back into the battalion again, where I met Jack Plattenberg. This is where Jack comes in. We met up, and he had been in the 14th battalion, he'd been in the 16th battalion. They'd gone into hospital, and the battalion had moved off to North Africa, and he had been sent up to the 14th as a replacement, I think it happened to Orlando or something. And he and I were very friendly, great friends, which carried on up until today. And we both ended up in the demonstration kitchen, which was...
Before we think about that, it's just important to talk about the trip that we were driving, what made
mostly benefits, and the mixture we had about 1500 rates worth of utility cars, you know, little cars, maybe the vans as it were, with canvas bags. But mainly we were on 3 ton trucks with my 2 or 3 Jeeps at the time, you know, as a little bit of experience of 4-wheel drive and how it operated and whatnot. Again, we had Dodge trucks, Fordsons, and Morris commercials. Mainly Morris commercials. It seems as if they like Morris commercials,
and we were driving
last week, because, you know, it's new.
Presumably these vehicles were makeup and then
within the battalion, yes. And then you go, there, the trucks were used quite a lot to take the infantry out on maneuvers and, you know, deploying them around about. We did quite a lot. At Hornsey, there's the meal there with an island in the middle. It was ideal for training, isn't it? Learning how to get across the island without paddling, you know, walking there, I should say. There's rocks and boats and there's an awful lot of attacking the island. And, the forerunner of landing, actually, you know, somewhere there. And it was a good experience up there, so it was really into proper infantry training. We did firing live bullets over your head while you were down on the beaches there, as well, so, you know, which was right there. That was all like clay, wind blue clay, you know. And you used to get 50 minutes, it took you all night to get the last uniform cleaned up again. And you knew you were going to be back down in it tomorrow morning. But,
yeah,
yes.
And
you're telling it, yeah.
And then you came back to do infantry training.
Back onto infantry training again, yes. We did about roughly a month, 4 weeks training on the heavier vehicles and the four-wheel drive thing. They used to go out and maneuver. And one of the trucks would be on the kitchen, you know, and the troops. Another one had the swaddies in the planks of wood in the back of the seats for them and this sort of thing. And you learn how to take them out into the country, this sort of thing, deploying them for night maneuvers and all this sort of thing. Going picking them up after maneuvers and so on, bringing them all back. It was all good training for everyone concerned, really. Learning how to work together, deploying people where they wanted them, etc., etc.
Was it really
that
you were going to be training?
Yes. Well, as far as I remember, we had the company set up in the field, you know. They were actually in the front doing the fighting, and your HQ behind. And then behind that, you had it was the air echelon who supplied you with materials and reinforcement troops, etc. And then you have further back the V echelon, these are the ones that are bringing them up, so we're passing people on. Basically, that's what it was about. Our stores, as you might say, logistics, I think it's called nowadays. To bring others up, yeah. Bigger dumps and so on, yes. I think they were There was supposed to be a platoon truck, didn't actually work all the time. It was painted by way of carrying our spare kit up, you know, the kit bags were always in the platoon truck, as it were, or the company truck. And if you were going to be somewhere for a while, you would draw your bag off the truck, as it were. Otherwise, you just manage with your small pack, with your towel and your spare underpants and shirt and whatnot, you know. But the bulk of your stuff was in the kit bag and in the truck. Mm. I think I had maybe five or six, if I remember right, of the three tenors disagreed with both carrying, you know, one was a kitchen truck, and then you drop down to the company who had it as a share of 1,500 words. I can't remember how many of these companies had, but you just see the others had three or four to a company, you know, or something like that, and then we had one or two tickets. I think mostly of them were Morris Manners, Morris, there were some Austin Times, they were very good cars. And the Hillman, mainly the commanding officer would have one, you know. The post corporal had one, you know, they were down getting stuff. It was shared, I think it was shared, you know, it was general purpose vehicle. Because he tended to have use of it quite a lot. It wasn't his personal, but he had use of it. And the driver, they wouldn't get the mail and take the mail with it. So, one was, you know, one took him to do the ration truck, go back to the echelon and get rations at the place, you know, with them. I can't remember exactly how many vehicles we had. Now I'm going to go back.
Quite a number.
Quite a few, yes, quite a number. I think each company had a three-tonner of their own for all the kit and everything, you know, and then each platoon had one, a 1,500 allocated to them. I know they're allocated permanently, but that seemed to be the thing. And occasionally, if we're in a situation where you could get a bit of leave sort of thing, say leave night off or something, the company took the turkey down, you know, and sometimes you have to pay $60 shillings or something if you laugh, take you anyway for a night out. Make sure you go back, like, you know, buses are so on, they'll get you back. Liberty trucks are called. Yes, I had, I think they sent about 8 motorcycles, I think, about mainly, they were spattered out because you had the grand carrier for two, you know, and they had, again, I don't know, but there were two or three of them from the machine guns and two or three motors, you know, the carrier for two, and they were just that way. I never got into the battalion transport as such. Most of the 14th Battalion had a fleet of vehicles. It wasn't a fighting battalion like the 16th. So, I'm just crazy as to how many vehicles we had.
And you're staying at the 17th Hotel?
We first went down into the hotel. And we're allocated, I think, about 6 in the room at that time. But we're only there 2 or 3 weeks while we're doing the motor transport. Then we went over to the school in Hornsey. I think it had been a private boys' school from what I gather. There were large wood huts. We went to the air company then and did some really rough training, and that's where they formed this demonstration platoon, which I was picked to be a member of, and we used to go around various units in the area, around Hull and Bridlington and whatnot, demonstrating how to do field craft, you know, across the fields and creeping along dikes and this sort of thing, because a lot of them had never seen it in the first place to go over the street.
And you're rolling that
with a machine, with a Venn gun.
Oh, you're with a Venn gun?
Well, it was a platoon, a proper platoon, there were 36 men, I think it was. Lieutenant in charge of it, you know.
Why have you moved the first transport to the
next one? I don't know. They hadn't asked. They did the training, they moved on, and some more blokes come in to do the training. And I used to think, well, what a waste it would be, you know. I mean, you were dual trained, as it were. I think I can only remember one of the lads, a lad called Luke, from over in the castle, who actually went on driving. And everybody else went on, they were infantrymen, you know.
This is what a draft training
battalion. Oh, yes. It was a training battalion, you know, the 14th, a holding battalion it was called. And they kept sending bombs away, you know, to reinforce the other battalions, as it were. When our turn came, which was very quickly, we went off to the 16.
Can you speak more about this particular exercise? It's like a demonstration.
Yes.
The techniques that were involved in the land at that time.
Yes. They were coming in greater detail then. We did a lot of digging there. Outside of this platoon thing, we learned how to do trenches and strategic positions, etc. Went out and did fieldcraft round about and like that would be the best place. Digging a hole in the middle of the field and saying we've got surround the market, cover the whole area, went to the edge of the river, something like that. Anyway, we did all that sort of training. Yes. There were slip trenches, you know, just like for two men, you know, sort of thing. And whilst that was going on, we were training to do this. One was arrowhead formation, you know, how a section would go forward in an arrowhead formation. So you had cover all around you, sort of thing. We went in open order, this sort of thing. We did pincer movements, and there was a laid down procedure for various types of field craft, as it was called. And we were trained with that, and this is what we went out and showed how to other people how to do it. And of course, we obviously trained following us. We'd been from the group, and somebody decided that it was a good idea to have a demonstration for people to go around and show the countries and regiments and so on. Ben gun, and Jack and I did the Ben gun, and number one and two on the Ben gun.
How did that work?
The ones carrying the pooches were the containers, the bullets for a start. But the number one actually lay down and did the firing, and they were prone to jamming and they sort of. And number two would be at the side and change the barrel for you and this sort of thing. I mean, you could do it yourself, but two of you work together as a team, you know. And then a few of them bumped off, we sort of laid over and took the gun. But that was the rudiments of life, you know. That was number one firing, I guess.
The rest of the two, each one's specified in
Everybody else in the platoon had supposed to have four magazines in active service at a big pitch of two in each, 28 bullets I think in each canister for a number of years. If you put more in, you put something like 59 in it and they tend to jam there. But if you're filling them up quick, they tend to put them in there. But anyway, they carried two. And the number two man would get the men in the platoon, you know, get them off their pooches, yeah, what they were doing, you know, the magazines or something, you know, and pass them back to you. You did fire, you know, just off, so you fire single shots in active service. But
Was it one bank of the film, or was it one bank of each section?
Each section was three in the film,
yeah. How many men did you have?
There was, I think that whenever the full set, I think there was supposed to be 35 in the section. There was,
was it 35 in the film?
And, sorry, there was the, was it 9 or 10 in the section? There was a Lance Corporal. Corporal of the Lance Corporal. The Lance Corporal was in charge of the Wren group, you know, three of you. And the one was one of them, and the others were rifles.
Can we talk a little bit about the Wren now that we're back in the North of the
I think it used to overheat with, and the gas in the cylinder, the tool and you turn the gas thing down, you know. And it tended to jam, well, we just, you know, unjam it, you know, those things to do. You could get it, change the magazine for one, case the magazine was jamming, put another one on, it was still jamming, and you'd check whether the gas chamber was working properly, you could move it down to 1, 2, 3, or 4 different positions, or you could change the barrel. Sometimes you change the barrel because number two man would carry a spare barrel, didn't he?
Did it get so hot that it was
No, it had a wooden handle on, you know, a bit sticking up the wooden handle, lifted it up and pushed it forward, lifting it up, sort of uncoupled it as it were. Quite easy to train, yes. It's training, it could do it more or less blindfold, you know. It got very hot. But you didn't need to touch the barrel, you know, just use the wooden handle.
What was
its
strength?
I think it was a good, good weapon, there's no doubt about it. It was pretty accurate, you know. You could put it on single shots and be very accurate. I think it had maybe 1,000 yards, it was near enough. Pretty accurate with the 1,000 yards, I think. I know it was fairly heavy, but you should put it on the top of your shoulder like a rifle.
Presumably you're the number two, you put turn in the cabin.
You should take turns in the cabin, yeah.
You should
have together relying on each other. The rest of the platoon was trained to do it as well, you know. Oh yes, and the whole platoon learned how to do it, but the makeup of the section was three sections with riflemen and five or six riflemen. You usually had 9 or 10 men in the section, you know, if you were in the fourth position. A couple of positions there was only 5 left in the platoon. During the fighting days, and don't ask me how I was the one of the five.
Do you recall who commanded this particular unit of the demonstration?
I think it was a Whitehead, if I remember right, went out with us. There was Whitehead and the Elliot, they were all our 15 people. There was 5 officers without 3 African officers, and they were all people that were involved. They used to all take a turn and be in charge of this thing. There was one or two in the platoon who were more or less permanent staff there at the fastest permanent staff at the 14th Battalion. Never seemed to go away anyway, you know, they were there all the time. Until very well under the war, I remember, and half a dozen of them joined us in the 16th. But we were the big guys then, telling them that who was on the other foot, they'd never seen any really angry men, and yes, it was a funny situation. We did a lot of, as I say, training on the beaches at the down, and out there, actually, we had an incident again. I don't know if it's the following night. We went to stay where the rifle ranges were. Because the home guard were coming to fire rifles at the range. And we had to sort of do all the potato peeling and all this sort of thing. And it was a 1914-18 war campus. I remember the roofs were sagging there, you know, these little roofs were terrible shacks. Depressing, yes, but we were there, we're on guard patrol. We had to do guard there. There was no bullets guard, it was concentrated, it was guard. This chap hadn't walked, you know, he sort of walked around, it was more or less a picket, and he walked around, and when it was your turn to land, he'd come and make you, you know, and he sort of took over, and this chap hadn't been walked up, and he went a hold of the corporal and he said, "Here, it's, you know, daylight, and I haven't been, what's happening, you know?" He went and found his throat and shot himself. And they were saying that he'd been very mourned for a week or two. His wife had gone with a baby. He shouldn't have been in the army, and all this carry on he's doing now, so he's going to. I mean, we were all in that situation, you know, but they got on the top of some people, and they had the, I remember the tribe always, they had the rifle down there, and pulled the trigger and blew the top of his head off. Some were saying it was impossible to do, but that's exactly what it happened. We're trying to prove whether he'd commit suicide or somebody was shot him. Anyway, we eventually left there.
Were there any air raids in the area?
There was quite a few. Now that you mention, there was one incident where there was Hull was very badly bombed. And when we went down driving during the day, after we went to see in the cinema, and I believe there were other people killed in it, where the roof was down, and the upstairs floor was sort of sloping down, nearly hitting the road, you know, and they reckon there was a lot of people in there. I don't know, I never found out, but they reckon there were a lot of people killed there. And cleared the whole lot off eventually, like, but we went past that, was a vivid memory. But another thing was, there was a German plane brought down quite near us at Hornsey, and we had to go and stand guard on it because it was getting souvenirs. And I got a bit of the windscreen, so we made a cross in a little plastic ring. Souvenirs, we're all over that, you know.